Attention all you rule breakers, you misfits and troublemakers, all you free spirits and pioneers, all you visionaries and nonconformists.
Everything the establishment has told you is wrong with you is actually what's right with you. You see things others don't. You are hardwired to change the world.
Hello, my name is Rahasia, and I do the Rahasia Uncensored Questioning Our Answers on BBS Radio. My channel is Spiritual Activist, so it's bbsradio.com/spiritualactivist, where I have many, many other interviews there archived. Today we're going to be listening to an interview I did with Barbara Marks Hubbard. Bless her soul, she's the sweetest lady that I've come across ever. She recently passed away April 10th, 2019. This is a little bit of a tribute to her and taking a listen to her vision of this new species that we can become on this planet. Matter of fact, I think we have to become it. If you stop and think back and do some research, and I implore you, all of you, to do your research, because if you don't get three or four valid places where you're trying to validate information, and you're just going to CNN or MSNBC or National Geographic or any of the Disney channels, forget it. These people are all bought and paid for. You have to really get out there and be active, proactive, be the hero in your own story and do this. If you look back in time, the history is becoming more and more clear that we were genetically altered from a probably Homo erectus. We were genetically altered to be a slave species. Now, whether you believe that to be true or not, you have to admit, as you look at our civilization, that template, that format, that motif, we fit right into it. We are a slave society. We are doing almost all the work for like 0.01% of the people at the top of this pyramid. And I think people are waking up to this now. So I want to take a look at the coronavirus, not as a problem, but as possible a stepping stone. Because as we've learned to live on this planet, we are inhabited by a variety of bacteria and viruses that we've learned to live with, they've learned to live with us. And throughout history, this has been an important step. Viruses have taken us in different directions. This virus, for sure, it's taking us in a direction of awakening to what's going on the planet. But there might even be more to it than that. But without going into it too much, because I don't have the background to do that, I would like to let's listen to Barbara Marks Hubbard and see what she has to say about this, because right now is a time to really pay attention. I mean, I was looking at, it's called WO2020060606, and it's a cryptocurrency system using body activity data. Now, you tell me that doesn't sound a little technical. And if you look that up, you'll see that it is very technical. Matter of fact, as I was reading it, I was amazed that we even have that kind of science. And this is only what they're telling us about. And it has 666 in the patent. And then if you look up the bill, HR6666, that's amazing that they keep putting sixes in this. And they have to know that it's going to really ignite conspiracy stories and religious Armageddons and everything else. But I think they have to do this. This is where it gets a little, this is my opinion, but I think there is some kind of a cosmic code where they have to say who they are and identify themselves. It doesn't matter if you're Dracula or Jesus Christ or the devil. When that knock comes at the door, they don't just bust in. They knock at the door. You open the door. They have to identify themselves. You have to invite them in. So could it be that, I mean, why would the Catholic Church named their telescope Lucifer. My God, I mean, doesn't that tell you something? There has to be reasons behind this. And I think the reason is they have to identify themselves, not only to their inner elite circles, but to the mass of public. It's like a buyer beware. So later they can say, hey, we identified them. We did our part. Just because you didn't do your research, look this up and validate it and see what it's about, it's on you. That's just my opinion. But there's got to be a reason that they're putting 666 in all these patents and bills and everything else that's coming up. Just my opinion. But I think there's something to that. And we should be paying attention because, believe me, they are. And you ask, who are they? Well, do your research. It's pretty clear who they are now. It's not even a big secret. They even declare themselves now. So, and I think as time goes on, we're going to realize that this whole coronavirus, this forced global sabbatical, has woke people up to the fact that we have to, and yes, I'm going to bring this up, they're deplatforming people for bringing up 5G and coronavirus. Now, why would they do that? Why would they deplatform Brian Rose of LondonReal.tv? Why would they do that? If there's nothing to it, why would they even think about doing it and bring all that attention to it? It's because they don't want people to know. I was told about 3 years ago, I was going to write an article about reptilians and the government. And I got a call from Neil Freer's friend. I'm not allowed to say his name, although he passed away now, so maybe it would be okay. But he called me up and he says, no, don't ever write an article or do a podcast or anything about the reptilians and the government and that connection. If you do, I've had friends, their whole world has been turned upside down. Well, I listened to him at the time, but I think the time has come now when we have to get over this. We have to get over the fear of some kind of retribution from these powerful elite groups. And one of these connections is the 5G coronavirus. Like it or not, there's something there. Otherwise, they would not make this big of a deal about it. You can listen to, I know he's a little crazy, Alex Jones. But if you listen to some of his rants, and he really gets into it too. You have to get past his voice, but listen to the message, not the messenger. I'm always afraid he's going to have a heart attack on stage. Then, of course, David Icke, which my wife and I had dinner with him a few years back, and he told me a lot of different things that are going on at that time and what was going to be happening, and sure enough, they're happening almost right to the date in the year. So listen to these people. I mean, go to LondonReal.tv and listen to some of his interviews with David Icke and Alex Jones and some of the doctors that's speaking out and telling us, hey, not only can we get through this without vaccinations, we have to get through it without vaccinations. I mean, look at what's going on under the radar. 70% of the polio on this planet now is coming from polio vaccines, and they can track this. They can tell exactly what particular virus is causing polio, so they can track it right back down. And then you see what's going on with these level 4 labs. Why are they doing this? Why are they experimenting with deadly viruses? They can only be doing it for one thing. They intend on controlled release of some of these viruses to bring down the world population. Try to think of one thing. I mean, anything. Toxic water, the air, the depleted atmosphere, the ions, everything. Everything could be relieved by bringing down the world population. This planet could really support nicely a 500 million people. So let's face that for a second and really think about it, because they are. And if you want to know what's going on, you have to know what's going on in your enemy's mind and understand where they're coming from. I mean, I can't blame anybody for wanting to take down the world's population. There's too many people. And that would solve almost every problem that we have. Is there a reason that we have going on 8 billion people on the planet right now? Is there some kind of a cosmic reason? You know, you have to have so many neuron connections for igniting a consciousness. You have to have so much of every platform building up to the next one to ignite the next level. Maybe we have to have so many human planetary cells to ignite a planetary consciousness. I don't know. These problems and situations are so complex. We have to reach out beyond ourselves and start getting in new information. And that's going to come by opening up our hearts, walking this path with a little bit of faith. And that's something I use sparingly in today's world, because faith can take you down some pretty dark places and you look around and there's nothing there. But right now, I think we have to walk down this path that we're on right now and think to ourselves that maybe there's a cosmic reason for all of this. So for right now, let's listen to Barbara, and you'll see this is a very special person.
Barbara, are you multitasking or what?
I am.
Infinitely.
I hit a critical phase change.
Okay. So, Bob, can you see yourself here?
Have you ever heard of a critical phase change?
No, but I think I'm experiencing one right now. Okay, Barbara, I'm Rahasia with the Lotus Guide magazine. And I really appreciate you taking your time to do this. And I was thinking before we start, I would give you a little brief idea about where I'm coming from, because our magazine is starting to reach out into the fringe mainstream now. So we're trying to find ways of bringing them information they can resonate with. Because,
good.
Yeah, because without the way I see it, it's like Einstein once said that we're never going to come up with the solutions to the same old problems from the same level of awareness.
Yes.
I really think that the only thing going for us is a global shift of consciousness.
Yes, I agree.
So this is what makes this so important to bring it to the mainstream, because I don't think the mainstream is going to be able to figure this out without this shift coming into play. So that's where I'm coming from.
I think that's very wise. I used to be more mainstream myself when I lived in Washington, and I was involved with Congress and the futurist movement and the space movement. And then I came to California,
right.
And you get more into the transformational and the spiritual, and to bridge back out with this inner shift into the outer shift is really where we're at.
Yeah, it's good to have that background, because you and I both know it's easy to preach to the choir. I mean, they're with us.
Right.
We're all wanting to do this, but we need to reach the normal, quote-unquote, people.
Right, right. So we're the new norm.
Yeah, we are the new norm. So.
Okay, all right. I totally agree with you. I see exactly what you're saying.
So anything we can go for in that direction, like, what is it? Like, when I hear you talk, I feel a firmness of conviction. Where does that come from?
That's a good question. The firmness of conviction, I would say, comes from inner experience of the nature of reality and a lot of study.
Right.
So the inner experience is one of spiritual evolution and desire to participate and all of that. And then my studies of Teilhard de Chardin and Sri Aurobindo and Buckminster Fuller and many, many others has led me to realize that we're in a time of planetary shift. And on the one hand, breakdowns that are being recorded mainly through our media and through scientific investigation as well as prophetic inputs and a lot of attention has been placed on what is breaking down. And so I have become really interested in what's breaking through.
Right.
And in my study of evolution, we see that crisis precedes transformation, and problems are evolutionary drivers. So I've become a student of evolutionary change.
Right. I was reading what you had to say about the chaos theory and all of that. And I've always been a reader of Teilhard and Lewis Thomas, Lives of Cells.
Yes.
Very good way to look at the Earth as an organic living organism, because we've sort of lost that, being in touch with that.
Yes. You know?
And I think it's important we get that back, because that's where our new information, the real solutions, are going to come from, reconnecting with Earth.
Reconnecting with Earth, and even deeper, I would say, connecting with the nature of evolutionary transformation. You see, Earth itself, if you think about it, it was a miracle itself, the formation of Earth. And then out of that Earth came bacteria, and then single-celled life, and the biosphere grew, and then animal life, and then early human life, and then the great avatars of human life and civilization. And now I see that what we're getting in touch with is the emergence of a planetary culture, of a co-creative humanity, of science and technology that completely transcends the creature-human condition. Biotech, nanotech, quantum computing, the whole internet, cell phone, nervous system connecting us. So I don't think we're getting back to anything. I think we're getting with what's emergent, right, and looking for the direction of that emergence. And it may be perfectly true that something is failing and dying. A certain form of growth, a certain form of consciousness, is just like Neanderthal. There was a shift from Neanderthal to Homo sapiens. It was basically a shift of species. And then we've had a self-reflective consciousness for maybe 50,000 years only. And it looks like self-reflective consciousness has given birth to a more evolutionary whole system consciousness that's barely surfaced yet in the general public. Right. It certainly is at the growing edge of intelligent people everywhere.
Yeah, and it seems like if the past holds true, where it seems like there's underneath the fabric of space, there's this matrix of consciousness that consistently tries to reorganize itself into higher and higher and more complex forms, whether it be atoms going to molecules, molecules to cells, cells. And here we are, we've evolved to this point, and if the consciousness that's emanating and manifesting through us holds true, what we're doing right now through the internet is an outer manifestation of what we're doing on a spiritual level of connecting into a global awareness.
Exactly. And I think that when you look at the internet and the search engines as, in Teilhard de Chardin's language, a noosphere, N-O-O-S sphere, right, which is a sphere of mind connectivity, of intelligence. It's also a heart sphere of empathy.
Right.
I mean, if there's a tsunami in Japan, we feel it. It's totally unprecedented. If there's a earthquake in Haiti, we are there. And people are rushing to help and sending money. And so the planet is interacting at an unprecedented level of both breakdowns of maybe misuse of growth and power, but at the same time, empathy, creativity, and spirituality. So to me, we're right at one of those threshold points. And what would tip the scales toward a more positive emergence? That's the basic question.
Right. And I think this is where I remember talking to Roland McCready of HeartMath, and he was telling me the importance of coherence with my heart, my mind. And it seems like the Earth, like you say, does have a heart. And I can feel in myself something that I can't really pin down, but I feel like even talking to you right now, we're talking over the internet and all that, but I can feel a feeling here that I know is coming from you.
Yes, indeed. You know, the word resonance, resounding, is a vibration, and it affects the field. And that phrase, morphogenetic field, that Rupert Sheldrake developed, which is a field that is affected by thought and behavior and learning. So like, if a rat learns to do a maze somewhere, another rat learns it more easily somewhere else. There's a field, morphogenetic field, a formative field. And I feel like this conversation among so many hundreds of thousands of interviews and talks and teachings and cell phones and Facebook, filling the noosphere with a form of consciousness from infantile all the way up to loving, innovative genius. And so one of the great things is that the more we can fill it with the innovative and lovely, loving creativity connecting, the more the field will make it easier and easier for others to connect.
The only thing missing is I can't give you a hug right now.
And also, I have all my life, particularly since the Apollo space program, had a real passion for the meaning of high technology. How come, starting with the atomic bomb, when Einstein realized the nature of the atom, E equals mc squared, and that was able to be built into a bomb to destroy the world, that was the signal of the beginning of conscious evolution for me, because that means the human species gained an awareness it could affect its own evolution,
right,
to a global scale. And we also realized that we have new powers, that if we use them well, our powers we used to attribute to gods.
Yeah, exactly.
I was 15 years old when we dropped the bombs, and that's when I asked my life question, which was, what is the meaning of our new power that's good?
You know, I was talking to Bruce Lipton about the evolution of consciousness, and what is strange is consciousness has been evolving, but it's been pretty automatic through the molecular world, the mineral, the vegetable world. But now what was the evolution of consciousness has become a conscious evolution because of our participation in it, which is the good news and the bad.
That's exactly right. And as one of the champions of this worldview, conscious evolution, and I've written books on it and I've been teaching it now for years, is that evolution itself has a breakthrough here, because we are created by the evolutionary process. And here we are, evolution becoming conscious of evolution. It's right. Really, I believe we will see this as great a jump as self-reflective consciousness was with Homo sapiens. And this, I call it Homo universalis. I think what's emerging is a universal human and a universal humanity. And the universal human is connected through the heart, through the whole of life, but he's awakened from within by deep life purpose to give that creativity further into the world and by a more cosmic consciousness. And if you combine all of that with the possibilities that come from biotechnology, nanotechnology, genetics, robotics, space travel, you begin to see a universal species, really. Mm-hmm. So when we get through this current set of crises and opportunities, if you stand for a moment on the other side, you know, we're calling it a crisis of birth, of the next era of evolution. So I've been coining the phrase recently of life beyond birth, instead of life after death.
Right. And like birth, you can't change your mind.
Life after this phase of consciousness, of right. This phase of capacity, and we're calling this transition the birth of a more co-creative universal species. So life after birth is on the other side of this crisis.
Right. Yeah, in a different, unprecedented, it's hard to even grok it in a Heinleinian sense because it's so out of our historical experience to have consciousness that is somehow intertwined in a global planetary mind. But I think this is happening. And it could be that this is why all of the quote-unquote junk DNA is there. We only use a small percentage of our brains. It's probably a whole frontier that's getting ready to open up to us. I think that's important to really realize that we have the inner workings, the mechanisms to do this.
You know, I'm just trying to remember where I read this, but it was very interesting theory how language affects DNA.
Right.
Yeah. And where did I read this? And so that when you articulate an idea, and particularly if you put some spiritual force into whatever you're saying is, that this is one of the epigenetic.
I think it could have been Bruce Lipton in The Biology of Belief.
Perhaps it was that, but this was some research. Now, I didn't read this from Bruce. I don't know that he said this, but it was, I have to really look this up. Russian scientists. And I taught it in my class a few years ago, and I haven't re-accessed it. But I think that the words and thoughts and articulation in language are part of that effect on the DNA and the junk DNA, according to this theory.
Now, what
it's our activating intelligence.
And imagine what it might be that we can't even figure right now, but what it might be by putting interviews like this up on the internet, where this information is saturating through the internet. We're putting so much really good information right now into this matrix of consciousness that we're still catching up to what that might be about.
Well, that's exactly right. The noosphere, the thinking layer of Earth, is being infused with this conversation times hundreds of thousands of people who are at their own emerging edge of consciousness. So we're not talking about just everybody, but the people where there is something of a higher consciousness, greater complexity, greater creativity being expressed, wherever that is, particularly right. When it connects with two or more, just like you and I, it because the resonance amplifies the signal.
Right. Exactly.
So I you know, when I teach my class, Agents of Conscious Evolution, which is available now on the Shift Network, I will be saying hello into an empty camera.
Right.
Every Tuesday night from 5 to 7 Pacific. And there are people from maybe 100 different countries on the call. And I've coined a new word for it, is that we are every here.
Every here.
Because everybody is here. They'll say, I'm here in Australia. I'm here in California. I'm here, you know, in Great Britain. And I thought, now this is really non-local. Because although our physical bodies are in these different places, when we are in this shared space of consciousness, we're here, like just you and I right now. I have no idea where you are physically.
Chico. Where are you? I'm in Chico, California.
And I'm in Santa Barbara, California. But you could be in New Zealand.
Right.
And it wouldn't make the slightest bit of difference in this, in the way this conversation feels.
You know, and it is important to come up with new linguistic terms to define this. Because there's so much that you and I might be able to talk about, and we sort of know what we're talking about without the words. But little by little, we're developing language every year, you know?
Every year, yeah. And there's you know, along these lines, along the lines of technology and innovation. There's a wonderful new book by Peter Diamandis called Abundance. The future is better than you think.
I'll check it out.
It's really worth it, particularly as we're talking about the transformational movement and the mainstream. Peter is a major innovator. He's a founder of the Singularity University with Ray Kurzweil, where brilliant young people who want to become social entrepreneurs using high technology for the social good.
Yeah, Ray is pretty amazing.
Well, the two of them together, Peter and Ray, I think we talk about new archetypes.
Right.
Well, I think those two men are archetypes of social, technological, entrepreneurial innovators that probably, in terms of the physical world, have the greatest impact on changing things.
Right.
Than other aspects of our work. So you have the inner consciousness, but then you have the external capabilities. And Peter coins a phrase, I think it's from this Santa Fe Institute, phrases adjacent possibilities. So for example, when a wheel was invented, it was a simple innovation, but the adjacent possibility of the wheel,
right,
the wheelbarrow, and then the this, and then the car, and then the plane, and then the rocket, and then the adjacent possibility.
Right.
So I have been considering the adjacent possibilities of the innovations in every sector of human endeavor. I see it as a wheel, like health, education, economics, science, and technology. You put that together, and you look at the adjacent possibilities of our collective innovative capabilities, and you really see restoring the earth, freeing the people, exploring the universe. Yeah. You really see that quantum jump.
Yeah, and I see things happening too. This year, for the first time in many, many years, there's more small farms than there are less small farms. And Italy is pretty much GMO-free. And what's allowing that is people aren't feeling so isolated because they're being able to connect and communicate and figure out what's going on. We're not so isolated just with TV or a radio. We're actually starting to communicate on a global level. And that's doing things and allowing things that before this time would have been impossible.
That is very true. So true.
Yeah. You know what I like about your message, Barbara?
What?
Is it underlies in a subtle form. I wrote a book on some of the dangers, the social and neurological dangers of rigid belief systems because mm-hmm. of our neurological cognitive process just filtering out everything that conflicted with previously held beliefs. But sometimes a message like yours, it's subtle in a way, but it has power in a feminine way. It doesn't have that bang, but it has that subtle feminine push, and it allows people to let that in past their filters sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I compare my perspective that started when I saw the astronauts take pictures of Earth from space. See, that overview perspective was able to completely awaken us. When you walk around on this planet, you don't really see it's a round, beautiful,
right,
blue planet circling the sun. I mean, our nervous system doesn't pick that up. But we've been told we're one planet. But when you saw it like that, it changed everything. I would say I had a fundamental experience of being in that astronaut perspective, but seeing Earth as a living system with the noosphere, the communication systems, the technological systems, the innovations, being part of one planetary system being born.
Right.
And that is actually logically true.
Yeah.
But it's invisible.
Yeah, the only way that couldn't be true is if for some reason, conscious evolution stopped.
Right.
Because if you look at history, that's what it's been doing the whole time, is building and building upon more and more higher platforms of conscious perception.
You're so right. And when you mentioned earlier that evolution has been going on for billions of years, but the species involved in it were not conscious of evolution, certainly not a conscious when things were going to cause their own extinction. But most species that ever existed were extinct before we got here. So right. Nature is always selecting and perfecting for what it is that works better. So when you see our situation and you realize that now we're the species is being selected.
Well, let's hope we live up to it.
Well, what conscious evolution means is become conscious that we are affecting everything. Then we have to become conscious of what vision we choose. Yep. You see, that's why the idea of emerging, what's visionary, is no longer just a nice idealistic thing. Because as we envision it, so we create it.
Yeah, you know, when just before this interview, I felt myself a little bit nervous, and I'm usually not too nervous when I do an interview, but I realized that it wasn't just you, but it's the message. Because I think if we don't do this as a human species, what you're talking about, we're not going to be able to continue to live on the planet. Because it's like changing your mind about being pregnant. It's not going to happen. You're not going to go back to the old system, even though they have the military, the media, they're taking control. They're trying desperately to, like in the chaos theory, where you have these two systems, we're in the chaos and they're trying to pull us back and restabilize the old, but we can't. We're either going to break down or break through.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And I feel that one of the things that I'm working on with the Shift Network is what we're calling Birth 2012.
Right.
And this is day on December 22nd, 2012. It has been selected as the day to celebrate what's emerging, what's being born, what's innovative, creative, and working. So let's say December 22nd, 21st in the Mayan prophecies is like the ending of a phase. Many people see it as the end, as a doom. But right. What I really believe, like a birth, the time in the womb of self-consciousness and just in the womb of separated competitive systems is coming to an end. But the phase of the creative, the synergistic, the connected parts of our species is growing rapidly.
Well, you know,
the sense of concern for each other is growing rapidly. So it's very important if we're insistent right out, you know, out of equilibrium, it's seeking a higher structure. And that's why we are so, all of us, right now.
Yeah, and I think that the idea of equilibrium brings up a good point. This is why we are so polarized, because it's comfortable being a Republican or a Democrat, and that's it. But if you try to find the middle ground, which is where the truth almost ultimately lies, there's a feeling of being off balance, because all of a sudden you're noticing you have to keep your balance. You can't just lay on one side or lay on the other side. And I think part of the new consciousness, it's allowing us to feel this balance in a higher kind of a way. And I remember when I was riding a bike, I tried so hard to ride this bike, and my left brain was just going to the left, to the right, and I was falling. But something magical happened. There was a transition of consciousness to my right brain, left brain, coherence, body, mind. And all of a sudden, I wasn't trying not to fall. I was just riding. And it was like this amazing feeling of balance. And all of a sudden, I realized that what was very difficult to keep doing before had now almost become difficult to fall. And I was riding along and I couldn't fall. And I thought that was so amazing.
That is interesting. Yes. Yes. You know, the word balance is important here because if a system, well, is far from equilibrium and we're in what Irvin Laszlo calls a chaos point, it does try to go back to stabilize. Mm-hmm. And I think the reactive politics and reactive religions and fundamentalisms of various kinds are that tendency. Suddenly, it's really interesting. Things that you thought were already handled, like the idea of contraception, suddenly we're not supposed to, you know, that's going back to maybe a thought this was more stable before the women's movement. It was more stable before we had all these possibilities. Meanwhile, however, it's not going to, you can't go back. So the system is seeking a higher order, and it will go either to a more benign higher order, or it will go to a more controlling, like Nazism was a terrible, terrible thing. There was a chaotic situation, and it went into the most possible negative because the chaos allowed the shift. So I don't think we can go back. I don't think you can stay exactly the same. So balance requires you tending towards higher order. So that's a higher balance.
Well, we've been in the womb way too long.
So, you know, I'm, as a mother of five, it probably, we don't know how long it takes a planet to grow up because we've never seen another one.
Right.
You know, we don't know. If you'd never seen, if you were having a baby and never heard of birth, you'd think you were dying.
Right. And you would think the person is dying if you were watching them give birth.
You would. And then when you see the baby and you didn't know that it was going to grow up, you think, oh my God, what has happened? I mean, really?
Yeah.
Just, it gets kind of horrifying. Well, I have been imagining myself as someone who has seen other planets go through this. And I'm looking at people on Earth and realizing they've never seen another planet hit their high-tech, overpopulating, polluting phase. And therefore, they don't know what's being born through them. They don't know what's emerging. So I'm standing on the other side of the birth with everybody else who's able to see this.
Right.
And then to help us get through the crisis towards something of a higher order of synergy, creativity, love, and actually breakthroughs of the creature-human condition. You see, you have to actually jump to see this with evolutionary eyes.
You know what? That really hits me too. You know, and I know your time is limited, Barbara, and I could sit here and talk to you all day long. But, if I could infringe on your kindness just a little, I have somebody here that is a true fan of yours, and he just wants to say hello. Is that okay?
Sure. I have another 10 minutes.
Okay, let me put you on here with Peter. Peter is a really good friend of mine, and you'll love this guy. He works with us at the Lotus Guide and does a lot of things for us.
Okay.
Thank you very much, and it's been an extreme pleasure talking with you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I feel much better since we talked.
Me too.
Hello, Barbara. Peter Melton. I was in your first Gateway teleconference.
Oh, my goodness, Peter.
Way back, I was living in Ashland, Oregon, working with Neil Donald Walsh back in the days there, and recently reconnected with Shaktari, who's doing a bunch of work with you now, I understand.
Yes, she is. Are you living in Oregon?
No, I'm in Chico. I'm in Chico here with Rahasha, doing some work with the Lotus Guide, and was ever since, and I know Steve Dynan and Deva, and ever since that whole shift thing was coming out, we tried to get the interview for 3 months ago for our last issue and didn't quite get it, so I was very happy that we were able to put it together for this one.
Thank you. Thank you. You are conscious evolutionary in your worldview?
I'm sorry, you cut out there for a second.
do you sort of share a conscious evolutionary worldview?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. In fact, I'm in communication with Shaktari about that because I have a project that I'm sharing with her through the Shift Network about that, about how I think the underlying everything is that we need to realize that we're in this together. And,
yes.
And that do unto others as you would have others do unto you, because they are you. And that
I know. See, that's a characteristic of the universal human. I'm just making up a name, that the type of human who feels that way, who just takes it naturally, connected to the heart, to the whole of life, and awakening with these life purpose and desire for contributing and all of that. It's like Mother Earth is giving birth to a co-creative human.
Yes.
All over the place.
Yes.
And we're propping up like daffodils in the spring. You know, when I grew up, I was born in 1929, and I, in my younger years and all of that, I never met anybody like me.
Yeah.
And then I had my five children in Lakeville, Connecticut, never met anyone for 20 years. Then I met one or two in the 60s, and then it started to crop up. And now I think there's a rise of a type of human consciousness that's global. It's not a religion and it's not an organization. It's a person.
Yeah. It's that feeling, that knowing of the connection, that we're not separate from our planet. We're not separate from each other. We're not separate from creative force or the creative energy, the evolutionary energy.
Right.
That's what we are. And that's what that's what the project is, because this feels so much like kind of like the peace movement is the only thing I can compare to it, is that we're looking to shift a consciousness through what we're up to. And so that's kind of where my project came out of, was this idea of maybe we could have a hand signal like the peace sign that could help people share that this is how they're feeling. And so I came up with one that starts with the two fingers.
That Shaktari told me about.
Did she tell you about the together sign?
Oh, that was you who came up with that.
That was me. And so I didn't know if she had a chance to share that with you last week or not.
She did. We were in, where were we? Atlanta together.
Yeah. She said she might have a chance to share that. And it's just been welling up in me, that signal to say we appear to be separate and we're not.
See, how did you know? All right, how do you know that? How did you find that out?
Well, wow. There's a good, no one's asked that question. Well, all this feeling of oneness and this whole spiritual angle about oneness and how we're connected and that who we really are, I think it came through the spiritual angle of who we really are, is this life energy, this evolutionary urge, this lifing, if you will. And if that's the case, if that's what I am, then I'm just an expression of that. And so are you. And so is Rahasha. And so are all of we. Kind of like the ocean is the ocean, but if a wave took on human consciousness, it would think, oh my God, I'm just this little wave, and not remember that it's actually the ocean expressing. And so that parable of the ocean and the wave really sunk deep with me to say that's the same thing we're dealing with, is that we are this evolutionary flow, but we're convinced somehow that we're some separate little being.
Yeah. So what you're really expressing, I think, is that evolutionary human understanding, which has been in great beings for thousands of years, but as a type of human, as a new norm, as millions of people feeling this way, is something really significant. And I'm so glad to meet you, Peter, and I do need to go now.
Yes, thank you for your extra minute, and
thank
you for the interview, and
keep on doing the great work.
There we go. Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. Right. Bye, well. Everybody.
So that was my friend Peter Melton, a really great guy, one of the many great people that I've had the pleasure to come across in my life. Just people out there doing whatever they can to wake people up. You know, one of the things that started me out on this path, and what is so significant about what Barbara Marx Hubbard talks about this new species, is Ken Carey. Ken Carey, he wrote the Starseed Transmissions. He is the guy that people like Deepak Chopra and Marianne Williamson, and the people that we listen to, he is one of the people that they listen to. And it's almost impossible to get a recording of his Starseed Transmissions. I have a recording of it, but it's impossible unless you know somebody. So he talks about a sacred emerging reality. And in chapter 9 of Starseed Transmissions, he talks about islands of the future. And islands of the future are little communities that get together and start right where we live with our circle of influence, our friends and family, and spread out from there to create an awakening. And as these islands of the future expand out, they start touching other islands where people are also working, other communities, other societies, nation states, eventually the planet. As we emerge into this sacred reality, we will find ourselves in a new reality, a new world, a new way of being. And this is a change within us and without us. Because you have to remember that everything out there, I remember talking to Fred Allen Wolf. First time he told me that there's no out there, I had to say to myself, okay, now this guy's a physicist. He's not just a crazy guy. There's something to this. It took me a long time to wrap my head around that statement. But when I did, I realized it's true. Everything that we see, hear, taste, feel, everything is created by information coming through our senses, whether it's digitized or whatever. That gets into a whole other show. But we build this and we bring it about in our minds. And we create in the darkness of our minds this whole reality so we can sort of ambulate through it. But this brings in what Barbara has to say about a new sacred emerging being. And, well, let's just listen to what she has to say. And I'll probably just go ahead and close the show on that because there's no better way to close it than just leaving it be. And just resting in what she's talking about, because it's something you have to, in a Heinleinian sense, you have to sort of grok it in a different kind of embracement with your mind and your heart, bringing those two into coherence and wrapping yourself around it. So let's hear what Barbara has to say, and bless her heart. We're going to miss her.
We are cropping up everywhere. What I call the new humans. Does it feel new? Are we giving birth to the next stage of human species, folks? Do you think so? What are the qualities of the new human that nature is once again out of this crisis producing something new? The new human has got an evolutionary spirituality that he incarnates the impulse of evolution personally. Does anybody think they've just finished? They've done everything they need to do? Do I? No. So it's a quality of the new human. You never are finished. Why? Because the impulse of evolution is you and is in you. And when you know it's in you and you say yes, consciously to the impulse, what it does is reveal to you more and more of its characteristics. In other words, you get a picture of what you might be moving toward if you place yourself in the story of evolution and you know where are you going toward? Higher consciousness, greater freedom of the individual, and more complex and loving order. Is that right? Does anybody feel the desire for more consciousness, more freedom, more complex order? Well, that's really good because that's evolution inside you desiring that. We didn't make up that desire. That desire is making us up. And when you say yes to it, and if you'll say a big and loud yes to it, I've noticed this in myself, it turns on big time. And then you get more and more and more that you need to do. The name of the new human, as we are expressing it, is Homo Amore Universalis. Homo Amore Universalis would be the species of humanity coming out of the synergistic convergence of the emergence within us as individuals. But nature is doing its magic again. It's creating synergy that we don't necessarily have to do, even be conscious that we're doing. But if we are conscious that we're doing it, and we do have an opportunity to be, I would say, consciously synergistic, or like in a syncon type thing, coming together to co-create, then I believe we could collectively experience, perhaps for the first time collectively, what it's like to be homo amore universalis.